You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
What's up, everybody? This is The Conversation. My name is Adam. I am excited about today. I'm so excited about today. First off, I'm excited about you taking even 5 or 10 minutes to listen into this conversation. Today's interview is amazing. Before I get to that, though, I just want to share a quick word with all of you. I shared this earlier in the week online. Here's what I wrote. If through COVID, you've made mistakes, you've become addicted, you've had an affair, you've stolen, been a jerk, felt worthless, thought about killing yourself. If those things apply to you, here's what I want you to know. Know God loves you. Know He still wants you. Know He's not done with you. Know He's still for you. Satan says you're over. God says you're mine. I just want you to hear that today. If you're struggling, if something applies to you that I read, I just want to throw a life jacket out to you right now and say that God still cares about you. He sees you. He still wants you. He wants you to come home. Satan says you're done. Satan says you're too far gone. Satan says you're worthless. Satan says you're disgusting. Satan says you're the only person that feels that way. Satan says you need to clean yourself up before you come to God. God says you are mine. I just want you to come home right now. I just want to encourage you with that word. Why? Because so often it feels like in the church, everybody's perfect, right? So often in church, everyone's perfect and their lives are perfect and their marriage is perfect and their private lives and their kids are perfect. Newsflash, away from Jesus, there is no perfect person. And so I just want you to know that person in church that portrays that they have the perfect life, it's not true. And oftentimes I found the person who portrays perfection is often the time this is the person who's struggling the most. Like kind of the know-it-all Pharisee Christian is oftentimes got things in their private life. They're looking at porn. They're struggling with this. They feel like they're depressed or they're suicidal, whatever it might be. Oftentimes that's the person who's struggling the most. And so I just want to encourage you, there is no perfect person. If you're struggling with shame today, if you're struggling with bitterness today, if you're struggling with addiction today, I just want to tell you, talk to a friend. Tell even one friend about what you're facing. Reach out to Jesus. Run to Jesus. Open up the Bible and read a Bible verse. Whatever it takes, just do not do life alone. Okay, so that's my word of encouragement today. In today's conversation, I sat down with somebody that I have looked up to and respected for years. I only dreamed of being able to have her on my podcast. Her name is Danielle Strickland. I still cannot believe I got this interview. Danielle is amazing. She is the quite possibly one of the coolest gals ever. Just one of the coolest people ever in general. I'm jealous of her sleeve tattoos. She's got an amazing story. She shares a bit of that. We talk about things like being intentional, about interacting with people who are different from us. Danielle shares about abundant life, and she said everybody wants abundant life. Everybody wants to be used by God, but we're not willing to sacrifice. We're not willing to make hard decisions. We're not willing to make changes to have the abundant life that Jesus talks about. So I know you will be ministered to. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation.
So I am here with leader, justice advocate, communicator, peacemaker. More than that, she's a wife and she's a mom. Danielle, I just want to welcome you to the podcast today and say it's a huge honor to sit down with you.
Oh, thanks so much. It's great to be with you too. Thanks for having me.
I told her before we recorded, there was a couple of conferences we were both scheduled to speak. And I can't remember what the circumstances were, but both got canceled. I'm not sure what that says about the two of us. Maybe it was 100% me. They're just like, okay, there's not an easy way to back out. We'll just cancel everything. No, Danielle, just as we were recording this, I believe we're 2 weeks out from everything revolving around George Floyd. And I also know that you're just as I just shared, you're a justice advocate, and I know it's something that you've been very vocal about is just racism, not just even recently, but in the past. Just is there been anything that you feel like like you see change happening for the good, like just any feelings that right now you're personally processing with?
Yeah. I mean, I'm super hopeful. I think anytime there's like an awakening or, you know, an exposing even of truth. I was just reading through Engaging the Powers by Walter Wink. I don't know if you had a chance to read that, but it's just mind-boggling, isn't it? And he says, you know, truth is not served by choosing untruth, right? Like you can't actually get rid of anything that you won't reveal. So I think that just the revelation itself, the revealing, the exposing of racism in all, you know, in all parts, in all systems and structures, I think is always good. Truth is always good and not easy, but sure is good. So I'm pretty hopeful, at least because I know that truth itself has power. So I'd love to just see, you know, the demonic forces behind racism completely driven out. That'd be my dream. Let's do that.
Yeah. It this time around, it feels so different. Just to be honest, I connected yesterday with Carlos Whitaker, a longtime friend. He's been at the church here many times preaching. And I said, honestly, for me personally, I've been someone who stood on the sidelines on the conversation. My son is African American, and so it's definitely something that impacts my life. And it's a conversation we've been having for years, but not one I've really talked about publicly. And I just finally was like, I have to get off the sidelines on this conversation. And even just seeing the transformation in my wife right now has been profound. And I just told Carlos, it feels like something is different. Yeah, I mean, it just feels shifted. I was in my first protest two Sundays ago, and so I was the newbie, and it was so inspiring, and I just really am grateful for that part of you and not being a new thing, but someone who's been leading the way in that for some time. Danielle, I just really want to hear your story. That's the part that I'm always most curious about, just what made you, and you can even start out, like, if you want to say your parents, what did they do? Just kind of share your overall story. That'd be fantastic. And I'll ask you a bunch of random bizarre questions in the process.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just having this conversation the other day with somebody because they were saying, like, where did this justice sort of thing come from? And I shared, you know, the trajectory of my family's history. My parents are both orphans. So my mom was a foster kid and my dad was sold illegally as a baby. And both of them growing up in sort of these really toxic, addiction riddled, abusive environments. And my tradition, the Salvation Army, was out knocking on doors, looking intentionally for kids who might want a place to belong, you know, might want to be part of the church, a family. And they discovered community, family for the first time. They'll say the first time they ever felt really welcomed in their life, experienced real love and belonging and encountered Jesus and, you know, miraculously broke the trajectory of their lives. Like they were headed, you know, we all know the stats and they, you know, the power of God and community broke those statistical realities and they met each other at a camp, got married, became Salvation Army officers. And so there was this like ethos, like when we talked about the poor or whenever we were serving folks that were excluded or marginalized, we never talked about it like they were different from us, like, because this is where we came from, you know. And I even joke around in Canada, there's always this tradition of hockey night in Canada. It was one night a week where we'd all watch a hockey game and everybody would be fiercely committed to a team, you know, like you're a fan of a team. But whenever I would go downstairs to watch TV, I'd say to my dad, who are we cheering for? And my dad would tell me who the underdog was. And so it was like collectively our family's team was always the underdog. That's our family team. And so I think that ethos is so deeply rooted in me, you know, that no matter what, you know, I'm on the side of the underdog. Like that's our team. That's my team. Yeah. Those are my people. And it's kind of that ethos that kind of drove me to do what I've done with my life.
That's incredible. So parents, occupation wise, were they Salvation officers? Share that with things.
Salvation Army officers are like kind of pastors, leaders in the Salvation Army movement. And then I, growing up, I wasn't so keen on God, really. I wasn't keen on church. I found, believed sort of what I would say, I believed a lie that God was pretty much perpetually disappointed in my behavior because I was naturally gifted at not following the rules. And so I could never really quite get this religious system, you know, this external code. I just never got it. And then added to that, I like perplexed kind of questioning of like, what is this? And really not understanding that God was love. Also experienced some sexual abuse as a kid in several of my parents' churches, in our own family, extended family, and kind of opened the door to a lot of pain and a lot of addiction. And so I just went off the rails and was really like from a young age, like 12 years old was the first time I was arrested for stealing a car. It's pretty young, and had to go to family court. I couldn't even go to juvie hall yet. I wasn't old enough. And it goes like that, you know, it just goes on and on. It's like a rap sheet I was just like completely disconnected from family and really my mind, my right mind, completely really on a highway to hell. Yeah. And 17, arrested on like 12 different charges, like drugs and trafficking and like, I mean, just all of the things. And ended up in jail in a holding cell downtown Toronto, Canada here. And a Salvation Army officer, lady friend of my parents, who never really gave up, you know, like my parents had already, I was estranged from them. But she just was relentless. She just came to visit me in this holding cell, which is also like no one's supposed to be able to visit you in a holding cell. But she, I call it a super suit sometimes, the Salvation Army uniform. So she put on her super suit and came to see me. And I remember her coming in and going, oh, man, like nuts. You know, like last thing I need is another lecture. Like I wasn't happy to see her. And instead of saying anything, she just came in and wrapped her arms around me and said, I love you. And slipped me a lawyer's card, which I call a little practical salvation. And when she left, I remember even just, I didn't hug her back. I was like completely not into it. And I remember shouting after her just to keep my cool, you know, you didn't even bring me a smoke, you know. And then the door shuts and I'm in there alone. And I don't know, a couple minutes later, the same thing happens to me, but with Jesus. I have this like full on open vision of Jesus coming to my cell in the same way, wrapping his arms around me and whispering to my ear, I love you. And I didn't surrender to Jesus in that point. It wasn't like I dropped to my knees and I said, you know, it's not that, but I did see for the first time in a long time. I did come to my senses. Like I remember literally saying, I don't know if I can say what I actually said, but I remember saying,
go for it.
Shit. Like I'm in jail. That's what I said. Like just, it occurred to me that this probably isn't good. And then just began kind of this slow unraveling of the oppression that had, you know, wrapped itself around my life. And then, you know, my mom describes it, I never changed speeds. I just changed direction. Wow. So yeah, that's kind of how
that's powerful. So Kate kind of got out of jail, obviously.
Went to a drug treatment center to get out of jail. And then I went to a mission trip to Africa, to Malawi. I had to get special permission from my probation officer to go.
What law did she break now that she's going to Africa?
That's right.
She's and I mean,
and they probably shouldn't have accepted me. I was very unruly. And I went with this organization that was interdenominational, but was really strict. And so we just had a battle the whole time. But at the same time, I had another encounter when a woman got saved. You know, we had to do all these things. It was a really strict place. And one of the things we had to do was we had to tell somebody about Jesus. And they gave us these little tracks, you know, like 4-point tracks. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm not doing this, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the problem was, is that every time you do something wrong on this trip, they would give you what was called a special blessing. We called it an SB. And an SB was literally that you needed to work on your free time. So I was especially blessed all summer long. They called me the SB queen. I got one every single day. So all I did was work. You know, I had no free time, because I just couldn't follow the rules. And so finally I just was like, okay, fine. Like I have some free time coming up. Like I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And so I gave what I affectionately call the worst gospel presentation ever with this girl named Fatima, who I said, this is literally my opening line was like, oh man, I'm so sorry to bug you, but if I don't talk to you, I'm going to get in trouble. So, you know, would you mind? And I went through the 4 points, very basic. And afterwards I said, you know, would you like to follow Jesus? And Fatima looked at me and says like, yeah, I would. And then I'm like, I don't think you heard it right. So I went back to the beginning and I did it 3 times all the way through. The third time I even acted out some parts because I was convinced it was a cultural problem, you know, like what. And finally I say, I let her get saved. You know, it was kind of me. And then I realized, of course, that, you know, I knew God could save anyone because he saved me. I got that. But what I didn't know, which would kind of change my life forever, is that God could use me to save someone. And that really reorientated my life around a God and a gospel that was much bigger than me, which I think was a real genuine metanoia experience. It completely changed my mind about what this gospel and salvation was about and what it was for.
That's pretty fantastic. Danielle, thanks for sharing that part of things. That's awesome. And I feel the same way I right out of the gate. So I grew up in a solid Christian home, wanted nothing to do with it. Thought Christians had never read science books in their lives. Like, and then God got a hold of me and struggled with the same thing. Different. My story was different, much different in this way, but just felt so inadequate that God could somehow use me. Feeling just so broken and also just so unusable. And it's amazing how God can do that. Danielle, one of the things that I think about when I think about you, and maybe it's from some of the stories that I've heard you even preach on, is just you kind of end up in some just unique situations where it's like, I can't remember what it was. I think the one story, it was years ago that I heard you share about cookies. Or yeah, I think it was cupcakes. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you want to share just one of those stories? It could be whatever. And also like, how do you feel like you find yourself in those places? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of like something, even for me, the last 2 years, every day that I've tried to wake up and just said, God, if there's one person that I can serve today, would you just make it really clear to me? And some of the interesting places I'm like, how did I end up here? But if you just want to share that part of you.
Yeah. I mean, I really think it's partly, you know, it's a battle of awareness really, isn't it? Is to be aware of what God is inviting you into. So I think sometimes people think like there are some amazing stories that I have from intentionally moving into crazy spaces. And so, you know, one of my good friends, Annie, was drug addicted and mentally ill because I lived in a drug addicted and mentally ill community. And so she's filled with, you know, I've got tons of stories of visiting Annie and hanging out with Annie and like these crazy things happening. Like one of my favorite ones is visiting her at a mental institution, because every now and then, you know, they would just take her away and she wouldn't even be able to tell you why they took her away. But anyway, so I would go searching for her and I found her at this hospital psych ward and went in to see her. And there's this whole thing at the beginning, sort of me saying, the person at the desk saying like, are you her social worker? And me going, no. And then her saying like, are you her pastor? And I was like, no, no, like that's too hard too. Like, I pity the pastor. Yeah. And then like, are you her? And then finally I just was like, I'm her friend. You know, I'm her friend. And it was like the woman didn't even believe me. You know what I mean? That's kind of how marginalized and oppressed she was. But she heard me and poked her head out and came running out, gave me a great big bear hug, Danielle. And then she said to me with these wide-eyed, you know, wide-eyed eyes, she just said to me, you've got to see the craft room here. Like, you've got to see it. It's incredible. They have every color. So I said, okay, sure. So she takes me to the craft room. And as soon as I walk into the craft room, I realize like she's done a piece of work here she wants me to see. And the reason I know is because she's taken one of those like rolls of paper, like the paper that rolls, and she's just covered the entire bulletin board over everyone else's, you know, just covered all the other art up. And then she wrote in these big black letters, she wrote, what will you do with the King of Israel? And then underneath in these little red letters, she had written, kiss the sun. And you know, this is right out of Psalm 2, right? Like, why do the nations plot in vain against the, like, why do, you know, what are we going to do with the King of Israel, we're going to kiss the Son. This is about intimacy with Jesus. And so anyway, it was just this profound, I call her my like living prophet. You know, she taught me so much about the depth of spirituality, about God, about faith, about like, you know, losing our like hallmark varieties of what faith looks like.
Yes.
And even just this expectation of believers to be certain kind of, you know, folks, and also just about the depth of brokenness and, you know, also that invitation to lean into those spaces as well.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now a message from a network supporter.
I want to take a break in our show today to tell you about an online parenting event that you will not want to miss. We are living in strange, difficult days, and I think it's safe to say that parents feel the pressure to lead in their homes especially well right now. And on that note, I want to encourage you to go and sign up today for the Perfectly Imperfect Christian Parenting event that will be held on October 23rd and 24th. This completely digital event was designed to give parents the practical and spiritual help needed to grow as leaders in the home. With more than 40 available talks, you'll hear from amazing speakers like Aaron and Jamie Ivey, Mark Batterson, Jonathan Pitts, the Duck Dynasty Robertson family, and many, many more. Tickets are only $49. So we invite you or a parent that you love to register today for this digital parenting event. Visit perfectlyimperfect.org to sign up today. Now, let's get back to today's show.
Sioux Falls isn't highly diverse, but I live in probably one of the most diverse neighborhoods. Tons of foot traffic. It can be a nice home right next or in between rentals that are really, really run down. And there's a native fella in my neighborhood named Bradley who struggles severely with mental health. And it's messy. I mean, it's a messy friendship with Bradley. You know, just addiction is highly a part of the relationship. Like, and there's the hard parts. Like for the first time, just the other night, I wasn't sure what this case was. He's never been upset with me, but cursed me out from four houses away. Just randomly started cursing, and I didn't even know who he was yelling at first. I'm like, oh. I think that's directed at me. Like, holy cow. And then so you have those moments that are messy, and it's just like, oh, you know, my daughter was scared, so she ran inside. And then there's other moments with Bradley. The one day usually asked me to pray for him, but this time he asked if he could pray for me. And he prayed one of the most powerful prayers. At first, you know, I was kind of like, okay, you know, like, sure, pray, you know, kind of like, whatever, skeptical inside of me. And he started praying, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is, every word spoken was just powerful and genuine and beautiful. Just putting ourselves in those places where I think there's so much beauty that we don't notice around us and so many opportunities. You know, I think we live such oftentimes dull, boring lives. When that same life, like it doesn't have to be some, we don't have to go across the world, that same day with an eye to see and an ears to hear can totally turn into the raddest adventure ever, which is like, how did I get to that place? Any other thoughts on that, Danielle, just how someone can begin to see those opportunities, anything? Yeah. Any words there? I just think that's such a unique part of who you are. Any thoughts, any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, there is this conversation around proximity, right? Like Jesus's example, of course, is that he always goes out of his way to get in the way. So Jesus is always going out of his way to get in the way. And I think people don't really realize that, I mean, consciously, on a conscious level, really think much about how our lives are, you know, they're segmented off from people who are not like us. And I mean, I guess this is part of this conversation about racism too. You know, there's literally a system of redlining in America where neighborhoods were, you know, were white and prevented other people, diverse people, different people than us, and all the kingdom joy, you know, for the most part, like all the Jesus, like all the power is in diversity. It's in the other, it's in difference. It's why God made every single human being different. None of us are the same. None of us.
Yeah.
And so I think that for me, like the struggle of getting out of whatever the boxes are, and usually those are built invisibly, right? With fear, with status quo, with like the easiest thing rather than the best thing. You know, that's probably the, like, I had a friend of mine who decided she would ask this question, what would my best self do? And just keep asking that, you know, what would my best self do in this situation? Or maybe even we would say, what would my Jesus self do? And so sometimes the battle is just having eyes to see, like even where we are and if this is where we want to be. And how we're living, and if this is how we want to live. And this can be from, like, you know, the simplest things of like welcoming a refugee into your community or into your family, or, you know, foster care, where it's like, do we really want kids to be neglected and stuck in a trajectory of violence and pain for the rest of their lives? And then everybody would say, no, of course we don't. But then when it comes to actually going to like at least to see how you could help, that's where we stop. And I would say that that's actually, that pressing through that is the secret to abundant life. That's where all the joy and the pain and the power and the goodness, that's where it all is in that pressing through. So first, for sure, metanoia, eyes to see. So take a look at what's going on. But then this idea of going out of your way to get in the way, like follow Jesus to the border places where he always used to show, or to the other side of the lake where those people live. And, you know, I think what we do is we want these incredibly kingdom, miraculous things to happen without moving.
Yes.
You know, without shifting, without changing, without cost. And there's just nowhere in the scriptures that suggests that's possible. The invitation is to come follow. The invitation is to movement. The invitation is to go out of your way to get in the way. The invitation is to. So I would just say, like, whatever it takes, even in your own personal life, just to be living the life that you really want to live. And if your life is like boring and dull and, you know, tragically status quo, change it.
So good. Yeah. For me, for my wife and I, it wasn't something we did intentionally, honestly. Even where we live, it was my dream house. And because it was an interesting neighborhood, it was within price range for us.
Right.
Our first 24 hours there, we got my car window shot out. There was two people passed out on our sidewalk in the middle of the day. And then later that evening, I came outside and there was a man urinating on my front lawn. And I was almost like, oh, excuse me. And I went back in the house to give him some privacy. So like our first 24 hours there, my wife was like, what have we done?
Right. You're like, well, that's why this house was cheap. Right. Right.
So, and it was such an unintentional thing. And yet it's brought so much joy and so much richness to our lives, even with all the craziness and messiness that it brings along with it. Daniel, I got two more questions I want to get to. If you would share about, it's easy to list off all the successes you've had. And for anybody, it's like, here's my highlight reel. If you'd be willing to share maybe a season of discouragement or a failure, really since you've began to be more, you know, speaking at conferences and stuff, have you had a season or a time of just failure? And what did you learn from that? If you'd be willing to share that.
Well, you know, I'm pretty transparent about having had a long battle with addiction. You know, I'm a 7, Enneagram 7-8. So feelings have been, you know, pretty non-existent in my life, to tell you the truth. So even probably, you know, pretty recently, like 6-7 years ago, probably even just awakening to, you know, some of the abuse in my history that I never had dealt with. You know, and the toll that it takes, you know, so this is a really interesting season of discovery internally for me. It was really funny. I remember somebody saying, like, you seem pretty fearless, in terms of like, let's go invade a brothel or let's go, you know, and it is true externally, I'm really fearless, but I realized that internally I was filled with fear.
Wow.
So I could totally, you know, we could stop human trafficking and I'd go like, you know, that's no trouble, but like go to a counselor. Are you kidding? You know, get some help for some for some patterns of behavior that are unhealthy internally. No, thank you. You know, like, so it was just a really interesting season of discovering that that fear that I could confront externally without any problem, I couldn't confront internally without some help. So, yeah. So that was really good. I'm really glad. I'm so glad that that kind of came to a head, so that I could actually deal with some of those deeper things. And then I actually started using, for several years, just the 12 steps of the AA program as a spiritual direction. So great. I just kind of attacked it, you know, just like what is this? And then can I use this as a means by which to get even more clear and free? And so that was a really beautiful season of my life of just trying to match the internal world with my external reality. And so I'm super grateful for that. I wrote a fair bit about that in one of my books called The Exodus, The Ultimate Exodus. That's a few that come to mind anyway.
Yeah. I really appreciate you sharing that. I'm always not a surprise anymore, but some of the most dynamic people are often leading out of brokenness and pain and hurt. And even for myself, had to go through a hard season not too long ago, where some things in me that I just had never dealt with. And yet it's amazing how many of those things, that crap in you, can like be the fuel in a not good way to keep going and press on and run harder and faster and climb more and that kind of thing. And it's not a fun, I'd rather go do some awesome things out there rather than mess with this in here. So I just really appreciate you sharing that. Daniel, last question I have, and this is coming from my Canadian assistant. She's like, there are many differences between Canada and the United States. Things I didn't know. I thought we were basically just one and we should just get rid of the border, but she's like, absolutely not. Would you be willing to share differences that you've seen in the church between the Canadian church and the American church? And maybe instead of just saying differences, is there any positive qualities that you're like, I feel like this is something the Canadian church does better than the American church, or the American church could learn from, and vice versa? Is there anything that's specifically sticks out to you that's just different as far as like, as far as the church?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, I always say this, Canada, the church in Canada is halfway to Europe. And what I mean by that is just culturally, you know, post-Christian culture has driven the church both in size. You know, the church has been in decline in Canada for the most part. I mean, overwhelmingly, it's actually quite tragic. Like 1,000, just the United Church alone in Canada sold 1,000 buildings last year. So it's, you know, it's in some tough times because the culture, of course, is post-Christian. So there's a generation sort of going like, not only do we not think the church is positive, we actually think the church is negative. And so this is a big difference. I lived in America for a while and I realized like, this is weird, but like in America, if you were to say I'm a pastor, you know, people would be like, good for you. You know, what a great thing to do with your life. In Canada, I try to avoid the subject altogether. Like I try to come up with other things to say, because if I say I'm a pastor in Canada, I mean, I'm done. It's over. That relationship's done. You're untrustworthy. You know what I mean? Like you're irrelevant, you know. So the church in Canada has had to, and at least churches that want to grow, and the churches that are growing are having to really wrestle with what is the identity of the church? What is the church for? Does it matter to the community? Like, is it, you know, is it relevant? Is it open? Is it humble? Is it, you know, so even the church I'm part of, a local teaching team here, is called the Meeting House. And, you know, they're just like, we're for spiritually curious people. And these are the people that we're talking to, are people who aren't quite sure, but might want to find out if this, you know, if this Christianity, this Christian faith might actually help their lives. And so even just like always consciously putting things through a filter that might be relevant to the people you're talking to. So I think as a result, the Canadian churches that are growing are much more missionally minded, much less Christian baggage in some regards, in terms of, and in America, it's kind of hard because I don't know if it's better or worse or like who's, it's just, it's a different culture. And I know there are some cities in America where they probably have more to learn from the Canadian church in terms of how to adapt missionally.
Yep.
And what I would hope they would learn is to do it quicker and to do it sooner than when they're out of options, you know, which is the great Canadian lesson is, you know, we're waiting, we're in denial, we'll be fine until we're no longer fine. And then we're like, shoot, we better adapt or die. And some churches are still just on their way to death. You know, they're just refusing to change. But I would say that would be the great lesson I would love for the American church to learn is how can we put all our resources and our energy and our ingenuity? You know, the Americans are just so brilliantly minded in terms of like trying new things. And like, you know, I just would pray that the church would just adapt before you can feel the pain of this. And this, of course, this COVID-19 is a great invitation to do so, I think. So that's my big one, I think.
Yeah, no, that's so good. Even yesterday, I was watching Starbucks announced that 400 stores are closing in North America, 200 in Canada alone. And they're looking at changing their model. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what a quick pivot that Starbucks is doing.
Right.
And what a bold pivot that Starbucks is doing. 400 stores.
Right.
And the church, I feel like, will make that same pivot like 20 years from now. And so I'm just like, I'm like, what do we have to learn from Starbucks? Just in what are they feeling and sensing? And I just even found myself convicted of that. And no, I really appreciate you sharing that. Danielle, this is as a whole. Thank you so much for the time. And I know I said this to you before we got on here. Thank you just for the work that you're doing and for the leader and person you are and for people, pushing people like myself in the area of justice. I've been someone that's followed you and I've been listening to your voice and you've gently been pushing me along here as well. And so I just want to truly honor you and thank you for the time today.
Great. Thanks so much. Bless you. Grace and peace.
Thanks for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.